Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
And now, for this week's conundrum, for the love of Spock and the 50th anniversary.
Hey, Cam, you and I, we had the opportunity to go into a theater and watch this new documentary directed by none other than one Adam Nimoy, the son of Leonard Nimoy.
Yes, it was an honor.
And, you know, we actually, well, I think you missed out on this panel in Las Vegas, the big convention back in August, but...
Yes and no. I went to the Sons of Trek, where I think a lot of this information was repeated.
Okay.
But continue about what you saw.
Yeah, no, I got to see a panel featuring Adam Nimoy. He was talking up his experience doing the film. I got to see a trailer for it as well. And... the documentary actually looked quite well done, which isn't necessarily the case that I expect when it comes to some of these Star Trek documentaries.
What would you say have been the high watermark so far for you?
Probably the best one? Oh, that's tough. I don't know. Honestly, just based on, like, I know maybe Trekkies has, like, a good reputation, but the one that I enjoyed the most, though, was Chaos on the Bridge, the William Shatner doc. But it seemed cheap in a certain way.
Right.
Cam, what were your thoughts about, like, the production value of this particular documentary?
Well, it looked like a TV documentary and a cheap cable station at that.
Yeah, but I thought, like, versus other Star Trek documentaries, this is very much on the higher end when it comes to production value.
Yeah, I would say in terms of TV ones, Chaos on the Bridge, and I actually like The Captains a lot, were the best.
Okay. But
theatrical, or whatever, streaming, what have you. Like, I thought To Be Takei, the George Takei one, was entertaining, was fairly well put together. I thought it did a good job at conveying Takei as a person, who he is, in an interesting way that will be interesting to compare to actually Nimoy as we go forward into this. And what we're going to do this week, folks, is talk about For the Love of Spock, kind of do it maybe 20-minute, half-hour review of that. And then we're going to jump into just talking about the 50th anniversary. This documentary lands on the 50th. We just want to talk about the event itself, and then how did Paramount handle that? So, you know, but getting back to, To Be Takei was interesting, I thought. And also Trek Nation, another one that's interesting to compare to, which is the Rod Roddenberry-produced documentary on Gene Roddenberry and the creation of Star Trek.
Yeah. Personally, Cam, what were your initial thoughts walking out of the theater after watching For the Love of Spock? Because I think what we should mention is, like, this documentary, the idea here was to document... no pun intended, the cultural influence of the character of Spock. And then, I guess midway through, you know, you find out, or at least Adam Nimoy realized that his father was about to die, and he realized he really had to make also a film about his own relationship with his father, which is a rather tumultuous relationship the two shared.
My thoughts walking out of it were that I really enjoyed this documentary. I think it's a very... colorful, vibrant, engaging look at the life of Leonard Nimoy. Very, you know, honors a very distinguished performer and man. And I think it's a little bit shallow, but maybe a larger question to tackle a little bit further into this review is, can a truly incisive documentary be made under these types of circumstances?
Well, you know, let's bring up kind of the elephant in the room here, though. Mm-hmm. If you want to make a very incisive documentary, but have all the rights from Paramount to run clips.
Yes.
Good luck.
Made by his son.
Exactly. So
shortly after his death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's not going to be like a cutting warts and all sort of background look at it. I can accept that. Cam, did you ever see the Page One documentary all about the New York Times?
I did not.
It's a very engaging documentary, but it's very soft on the New York Times. And I believe as a director who appeared at a film festival that I was at, he said, like, this is meant more like a love letter to the New York Times as opposed to being an incisive documentary.
Right.
I still think Page One is definitely worth watching. But much like For the Love of Spock, I think For the Love of Spock is definitely worth watching, even if you're not going to get, like you said, this deep look into behind the scenes, what's going on here.
Right, like, I didn't get a lot of stories that I didn't know as a Star Trek fan. You know, we get to hear sort of the origins of a lot of, you know, the Spock moves, if you will. You know, the Vulcan salute, the nerve pinch, sort of the essence of how he captured the character and portrayed him on screen, his thoughts on, you know, the movies, and how the evolution of Spock. But you don't get a lot of stuff that maybe the real, like, hardcore nerdy fans are like, tell me something I don't know. This movie, I think, actually works surprisingly well, I think, for a general audience. We went with a friend of the show, Mark Carter,
who
was with us for the Star Trek V review, and he really, really does not know much about Star Trek at all. He's never watched an episode of the original series, and he came away actually really enjoying it. So I think it works in a way that it conveys why Leonard Nimoy was special to an audience that doesn't really care about Spock that much.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, you've got two hosts of a Star Trek podcast. I think we also go to a lot of conventions.
Yeah.
We've heard all the stories before.
Right.
But I think, you know, if I could kind of have like a blank slate for my knowledge of Star Trek and just watch this completely neutral, I think I would have gotten so much more out of this film. I think it was, for as you said, as shallow as it may have been, I still found it gripping and intriguing in a very way. And I think it was so clearly a very personal story about Adam Nimoy. I want to go so far as to say that he's the real star of it.
Yeah.
But I think the success of this film is, he was so critical to it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Well, I think it helps that he's a filmmaker himself. So he really brings a really sharp eye to what he's doing. Like, I feel like he was as objective in the making of this documentary as he was able to be. Like, it didn't feel kind of like a softball pitch for him. Like, there was some, you know, some rough territory. I think he even maybe went a little shallower on it than it possibly was. You know, he talked kind of about the period where Nimoy was, like, inviting camera crews into the house to photograph the family. Yeah. The family all looks miserable in all these photos. And it seems like there was a real divide between Nimoy and his first wife. And we never get interviews with either of his wives.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, I thought. Even the second one, who might have something to say.
She may just not have felt comfortable doing it, because it seems as if Adam Nimoy was close to the second wife.
Right.
I can maybe understand why Adam Nimoy's mother did not want to participate.
Right.
But they don't sugarcoat it. Both Adam Nimoy and Leonard Nimoy had addiction issues when it came to alcohol abuse. And it was also a problem for them growing up, because Adam Nimoy was, he even called himself, you know, a deadhead. He loved smoking his Mary Jane, and his father did not approve, even though at the same time his father, he talks about it throughout this documentary, that, you know, he had like this ritualistic relationship with alcohol when he was filming Star Trek the television series.
Yeah.
You know, so it is fascinating to see that, you know, you say that the addiction is kind of a genetic thing, and it kind of passes from father to son. Do you think that their relationship would have been as conflict-ridden as it was if not for these shared problems with alcohol abuse?
I don't think so.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of gather. I wish they went a little bit deeper with that, but, I mean, props to Adam Nimoy for being willing to talk about something that's very, what a personal thing to talk about, though.
Yeah, no, very much so. Like, I appreciate the honesty of the filmmaker. Like, comparing to Trek Nation, the Rod Roddenberry one, I think that one, I think it's actually entertaining and has some good insights. But Rod Roddenberry isn't the personality. He doesn't bring, like, the gravitas of what Adam Nimoy does. And so it's harder to take that documentary as sincerely as this documentary. When Rod Roddenberry's on screen talking about, you know, his father, you know, cheating on his mother and all that stuff, you understand sort of the emotion, but it feels more calculated than Nimoy. Like, the Nimoy documentary feels very honest and raw.
Yeah.
Whereas Trek Nation feels a little more staged, a little less polished, I guess.
What do you think about just the number of people that they got to do for interviews? We have Simon Pegg, Chris Pine, Zach Quinto, William Shatner.
Zoe Saldana.
Yeah, we've got George Takei, Walter Koenig. We've got just throngs and throngs of Star Trek royalty throughout this. You can really tell, like, I don't know if as many people would come out for a documentary dedicated to William Shatner, for instance.
Well, we'll find out one day.
One day, you know. But what I'm getting at here, though, is that Nimoy is well loved, you know, among Star Trek crews. You know, so I think it's kind of a testament to him that he was able to get that response. I honestly, in, strange as it might be, but like his brother Mel Nimoy was featured throughout, and I find it fascinating, even though. Again, Mel Nimoy didn't have that many incisive, you know, things to say about his brother, but even that just gripped me in a way, because it felt so personal.
And he was actually more of the heart of the movie, I felt like. Adam Nimoy is a maybe a little bit like his father, gives off sort of he's a little bit aloof, you know, sort of a strong exterior.
Yeah.
Whereas Mel, you could see, was kind of the heart of the family.
Yeah.
Like, there, when he's talking at the end, you know, about Nimoy's passing, like, his, you know, he's really, like, breaking down on camera. And that is that type of emotion just feels so honest, because Mel is not a well-spoken Hollywood type. You know, he's conveying it, you know, in his own way. And it just feels so, like, authentic and real.
And so, Cam, as, say, a 50th anniversary, you know, is this a good way to spend a fan's time, you know, to acknowledge that 50 years have passed since Star Trek came on the air?
I think so. Like, you know, we talked about, you know, that, you know, this really shows a lot of footage from the original series, and seeing that on the big screen was a treat. Like, getting to, you know, for the, they're talking about episodes like This Side of Paradise, Devil in the Dark. Like, what a just wonderful experience seeing all these clips from across the board of the original series. I had one thing I wanted to get back to, though. Just, you were talking about the guest stars in this documentary, and this kind of ties to the 50th, too. I really wish, and I think this is a ball that was really dropped, I wish they had had Brent Spiner on, because the Spock role, the idea of sort of the alien learning about humanity, was so influential on Data, on Worf, on all of these characters that played aliens going forward. And I would have loved for them to talk about the Spock archetype and how important it was to Star Trek and the spirit of Star Trek that's carried it 50 years. I don't expect them to have Jolene Blaylock out there talking about Enterprise. That's not going to happen, as much as I would be cool with it happening. I just think that, I think Jerry Ryan is someone who would have been very recognizable to talk about 709. I just would have loved to hear how that character informed their approaches to their characters, who are also so vitally important and popular within the franchise.
And I think the fact that Brent Spiner and Leonard Nimoy, you know, appeared opposite each other in Unification, kind of connects the dots a little bit more closely than you would with, say, T'Pol or Jerry Ryan appearance as well. Yeah, I agree. That would have been nice. We did notice in the end credits, though, that there are a number of thank yous given to certain actors, such as Jonathan Frakes.
Nana Visitor was listed.
Yeah, which makes me think that, you know, Adam Nimoy maybe did interviews with them, but they just did not make the final cut. And look, I'm happy if a documentary tries to keep it tight. We saw that was one of the follies of Trekkies 2.
Right.
They did not try to keep that film tight.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the 8.5 minutes dedicated to the behind-the-scenes look at a fan film being made about an Old West town.
That was gold.
Yeah. Fool's gold.
Holy shit. Yes. there was one moment I want to talk about in this documentary that wowed me. Because, you know, I mentioned Trek Nation and To Be Takei, and I think they're both worth watching. I think they are probably, previous to this, probably the high points in Trek documentaries. But I would say this is at the top. There was a shot in this that started in a way where I was cringing, and it turned into a moment I found really moving. Do you have any idea? You have this like blank stare on your face.
I was just like, I kept my pants on the whole time, Cam. What are you talking about?
There was a moment where it shows Adam Nimoy in the captain's chair on the original crew bridge from Las Vegas, from the Las Vegas setup. And he's imitating Kirk whenever, and I was like, oh man, this is cheesy, please stop. And then the camera pans to the left, and they blended the footage with Nimoy in the chair, turning back and talking to him. And I was like, this just went from something cringeworthy to something genuinely moving.
No, I like that moment. It worked for me as well.
Yeah, so. That's the type of like creativity, though, that you see in this documentary, that the other Trek documentaries just maybe didn't have the ambition to even try.
Well, let's bring up a very important topic, or point here, though, is Adam Nimoy is also talking about his own, you know, career journey, how he started off as a lawyer, came to hate his job after a while, and his own father helped guide him into a career in filmmaking as well. And so we see that carried through. And, like, I think it's the ultimate testament to, look, it might be a tumultuous relationship with his own father,
mm-hmm.
but the guy had a profound effect on his son. And I think this is such a great testament to that relationship that is still very strong between them.
And I really appreciated that, yes, this is definitely a tribute to Spock and Star Trek, but it really captured the essence of, like, Nimoy's career. You know, it focuses on his theatrical career, his directing, his photography. I thought it was really fascinating to see that they were actually paying attention to, like, Mission Impossible and the Philip Kaufman Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is fantastic. One of the really fun Nimoy casting choices.
They even pointed out some of his failures as a director. That Diane Lane movie that bombed.
Diane Keaton, yeah.
That bombed at the box office.
They did not mention Holy Matrimony, though, starring Patricia Arquette and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
But look, we got a Look Who's... not a Look Who's Talking, Three Men and Baby reference, which
yeah.
I did appreciate. But going back to, like, kind of the career trajectory that Leonard Nimoy had, I love just seeing old clips of, like, TV shows that he was on, like, pre-Star Trek. You know, seeing him play, like, rascal or like a bit of a greaser sort of fellow,
right?
But also just to see him being like a distressed cop in Roddenberry's The Lieutenant.
Yeah,
you know. So great stuff here. One of the things that I wanted to point out is for the Adam Nimoy panel in Las Vegas, you and I maybe a few hours earlier or maybe the day before, we had been discussing how it's very rare to see behind the scenes interviews from the cast of the original series from way back in the day, like where you see Leonard Nimoy in costume as Spock, just talking in his regular Leonard Nimoy voice.
Right.
The moment that I realized I wanted to watch this For the Love of Spock doc was when Adam Nimoy played that trailer and they featured, you know, Leonard Nimoy in beautiful color speaking as Leonard Nimoy while dressed as Spock, you know, from behind the scenes. And I actually, like, we joked a bit about how I kept running into celebrities on the elevators at the convention and I never knew it.
Yeah.
This is one of the few, I think one of only two times the entire convention that I realized I was on the elevator with one of the panelists. And Leonard, Adam Nimoy and I, we shared an elevator, but I didn't get the courage to tell him that his documentary trailer looked good and I was going to go see it. So the other time being when I was on the elevator with you, Cam.
Of course, there's
a Star Trek celebrity.
You're like, I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Yeah, and then you said you're the only one.
I was bummed though that, you know, as much as they covered so much of Leonard Nimoy's career, I was bummed they didn't include a clip of one of his Simpsons appearances. Because to me, you know, as someone who growing up in especially the 90s, my teenage years, Nimoy for me like was so important because of that monorail episode.
Yeah.
As well as the X-Files crossover, where, like, that to me, you know, they talk about In Search Of and all that sort of stuff in this documentary, but those Simpsons spots had a huge impact on me.
Yeah, I bet there could have been a little bit more finagling. I bet they could have gotten Fox to let them use those clips, but who knows what kind of... Yeah. Maybe they reached out and they tried their best, and it was just very untenable, like, whatever they had to agree to.
Right.
So, yeah, but a little bit disappointing.
I mean, I thought Nimoy just showed fantastic comic timing both of those appearances.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was just a treat to see him on there. And, you know, there's so many guest stars that show. I mean, it's still going. I haven't watched it in God knows how long. I got season 20 for, like, $3 at the Salvation Army recently, so I'm watching that.
Who's on the front cover?
Oh, it's just, like, it's the 20th anniversary, so it's a mash of all the characters.
Ah, okay.
But, I wasn't even watching it at this point, and this is like 1999 or something like that.
Right.
So, or no, it was I think 2007. But I had basically stopped watching 99. And then, yeah, so...
Is that the Mark McGuire season where Bart Simpson starts taking Ritalin?
But yeah, that doesn't even ring a bell.
Okay.
So I might have been out by then.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that, like, Nimoy was so prominent in those episodes in such a crucial moment in my life. I mean, Nimoy blew away most of the guest stars on The Simpsons.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm sorry, but some of those early guest stars that they have. Wasn't Dolly Parton a guest star or something?
Maybe.
Who was the country music singer that?
Beverly D'Angelo.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could have lived without that.
Yeah.
But Kim, we should have mentioned at the top, though, you know, like, this, of course, was being screened at one of our very small, one of the tiniest local theaters here in the city.
Yeah.
It's kind of their way of celebrating the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Yes.
How did you find out that this was going on?
This was fascinating. Because, and by fascinating, I mean probably not fascinating. But back when we went to, I guess it was what, last February? Me, you, and fallen co-host Ben Yong went to a screening here in Vancouver. Oh, and Andy Chen, guest, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Went to a screening of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. And before it, there was a brief, like, 20, 30-second graphic that basically said, Star Trek, the fan event, coming to Cineplex Odeon. Now, for those of you who don't know, Cineplex Odeon is the Canadian major theater chain, kind of like an AMC or a Regal or whatever from the States. Cineplex Odeon is our brand. But so this graphic popped up, and we were baffled as to what this meant. It did not indicate in any way what it was. Just that the fan event was coming. There was no date. Did it say fall? I don't even know that it said that. I feel like it just said 2016.
I think maybe it said fall. I just know that there's a lot of supposition going on after the film as we were debating what it could possibly mean because it was so vague.
Yes. And so over between February into September, I spent, you know, every maybe month and a half, 2 months, I would hop online and try and figure out what this was, just Googling around. I found nothing.
Yeah.
Finally, in September, I was like, it's the 50th anniversary. Something must be going soon, if at all. And I managed to find, not by Googling the event, I managed to find in the theater's archives of movies that they played. So, you know, they've got current releases and then stuff going back a few months, generally. So, like, Turtles 2 would be listed there. Stuff from May, April, that sort of thing. Jungle Book. I found a listing for Star Trek The Motion Picture. And it said opening, like, September, what, 5th or whatever it was? 6th?
Yeah, I think it was the first week of September.
Yeah. And I was like, well, that's strange. What does this mean? And I found listings also for The Love of Spock and Wrath of Khan. And I was baffled, like, why is there no event for this? Because all their events are listed on their events page. And they list events months in advance. This is not something they do last minute. And there was nothing. No listing, no nothing. So I was calling you and Ben, going, I think there's something happening this week in September. So basically, the long story short, Tyler and I go. We found a listing finally, like, what, 3 days before the movie played? We found a listing online for the actual theater it was playing in. Went. We were basically two of six people in the theater.
Yeah, and it wasn't the only screening in which it was very empty for us, because we also saw Star Trek The Motion Picture before we saw For the Love of Spock. Again, very empty. I think the theater was even emptier for The Motion Picture, was it not?
Yeah, it was six people.
Yeah, mind you, we did see it in the middle of the week, both
sure.
films, you know, so it wasn't maybe the weekend crowds. And
but
the theater, and I'll say this, the theater that I was playing in, it's a little bit more uptown versus downtown.
Right.
Small theater, so maybe harder to draw a crowd, but it was still pretty pathetic turnout. For something that had absolutely no promotion whatsoever that we could
zero.
Tell.
Zero. Like, and the thing is, Cineplex Odeon is really good about hyping events. I remember they did a revival screening a few months ago of A Place in the Sun, the Montgomery Clift Elizabeth Taylor movie. They hyped the crap out of it. There was posters up in the theaters. They were saying, check online. It was on their events page. Yeah, if you followed them, you know, on Facebook or Twitter, they were tweeting about it.
Joined the costume contest that was going on before the screening?
I actually went to see A Place in the Sun for that revival screening. The theater was half full.
Yeah.
That's because they hyped an event. They did not hype anything to do with Star Trek for this 50th anniversary. It was embarrassing.
Is that indicative of maybe a broader issue that's been going on throughout 2016?
It must be, because the thing is, A Place in the Sun played in, I think, like seven different locations in BC. This played in one theater, unhyped.
And it would have been, what, three screenings of For the Love of Spock during the 50th anniversary.
Yes.
It was in and out of here, lickety-split.
Yes.
Yeah, so now I guess, I mean, like, I think the life for this film was always meant to be kind of VOD.
Sure.
But still, Cam, this is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. How have you been celebrating the 50th anniversary of Star Trek?
Well, you know, on September 8th, I was working an early shift, but I got up extra early, and I watched Spectre of the Gun, which, because I'm working my way through season 3 right now, of the original series. And then when I got home, I watched Day of the Dove and For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky. And, you know, maybe not the episodes that spring to your mind as like, oh man, when I celebrate the 50th, I can't wait to touch upon those season 3 episodes. But I really, you know, just had a great time with those episodes, especially Day of the Dove and Spectre of the Gun, which I think are both really good episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I had a busy day that day. I wasn't even so sure I was going to be able to find time to watch an episode of Star Trek. But I felt inspired because, I kid you not, I was leaving a radio station where I often have to do some work. And as I'm leaving, there's a guy on the street walking by in a Spock uniform. And I was just fascinated. It's like, wow, that is a hardcore fan. It's the 50th anniversary of when The Man Trap first aired on U.S. television. It actually aired in Canada a couple days earlier.
Right,
I don't know if you know that.
You know, you were dressed as the assault vampire at this point, right?
No, I was dressed as the Orion slave girl.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But I was like, wow, props to that guy. And then as my colleague and I, we drive by the radio station once again, I peer through the window into the studio. That guy was actually a guest on the radio station.
Oh, really?
There to talk with one of the hosts about just the fascination of Star Trek fandom.
Question mark, Tyler. Why weren't we on the air?
I really should have pitched it to the station manager.
Seeing as how this is Vancouver's Star Trek podcast.
That's a complete fail on my part, because honestly, if I had pitched it to the host of the show that is on after mine, she would have let me on, and she would have been like, you're into Star Trek? Come on, I'm in. Like, talk for like half an hour. She would have been delighted, but instead, look, good on her. She got like a guy who would actually dress up. You know,
I would have dressed up.
I know. But and so later that day, you know, it was a long day at work, and I get back, and I'm like, you know what, Tyler, you got to push through, you got to watch at least one episode of Star Trek.
Right.
Do you recall what episode is in my queue next to watch?
Was it Miri?
It was Miri, which is an interesting way to celebrate, you know, the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, you know, because if you think about it, those kids aged only, it take them 50 years to age one day or something like that.
Right.
So maybe I could somehow justify it that way.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm really reaching here. But that's how I celebrated Star Trek, the 50th anniversary on that particular date.
Nice, nice. Well, how did Paramount celebrate the 50th anniversary?
Well, I think the fact that you have this documentary from Adam Nimoy that gets a total of 3 screenings in the entire province of British Columbia.
They actually did another one last weekend at the Rio Theater in Vancouver.
Okay, so that's 4 screenings.
And I saw the Rio actually promoting it.
Well, and that's the thing. The Rio is... Okay, Cineplex Odeon is a big theater chain. And even though we mentioned that it was playing at a small theater, it's still run by a large theater chain.
Yeah.
Rio is completely independent, and I do notice that the say what you will about the owners there, I don't always have the nicest things to say about them, but they do want to make sure people come out to the movies that they're screening. Yeah, they did do a better job, you know, advertising that, even though I guess I missed the marketing, but you did catch it.
No, I saw it. Yeah, they had it all over Facebook and Twitter and whatever.
I guess those algorithms just don't know me as well as they think they do when it comes to Facebook marketing camp. So, here's the thing. Cam, did Paramount even do a good job marketing the fact that Star Trek Beyond was coming out on the 50th anniversary year of the original series?
Not at all. And, you know, we're going to talk next week about Star Trek Beyond and sort of, you know, that movie's box office and maybe where they're going to go from there. That should be a really good episode when we have Patrick Johnston on. I think that'll be a lively discussion.
Yeah.
So we're going to touch more on that movie next week. But in terms of marketing, they hugely, I think, dropped the ball by not embracing the 50th anniversary. You know, you look at James Bond and Skyfall and how hard they embraced that 50th anniversary. They even had 50 appear on posters and things like that. If they had done that for Beyond, I know that the way they were thinking was, if they say 50, people think it's old and don't want to see it, which is idiotic because 2 films have come before it that have a built-in audience anyway that have shown up. Like there's something going to go, wait, Star Trek's old? I'm not going to see the 3rd one.
Yeah.
So that was just idiotic. All it does is kind of hype it up and say, Star Trek's been around a long time. It's a big deal.
It's as if you're missing out by not celebrating.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay, so the way that I thought that the celebration was approached, you know, it felt very much when the newscasters were saying, hey, today's the 50th anniversary of when Star Trek first aired on television. It felt as if they were approaching it the same way that you had announced that the 2019, that's going to be the 50th anniversary of the Brady Bunch premiering.
Sure.
It just kind of felt like, hey, isn't that like a little quirky factoid? You know,
yeah.
It's just like the Brady Bunch premiering. We've discussed it on our, I guess it was our 50th anniversary episode, how Star Trek changed the world, about how this is a franchise like no other. It's not every day that you go to a Lost in Space convention, but Star Trek...
Well, maybe not for you.
Not every day. Just every 4 days. Yeah. But, no, look, no other franchise really kind of has persisted the way that Star Trek has for 50 years.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's been so successful at doing so, I think that's monumental.
And, you know, in a way, in a very sad way, they kind of tested the waters earlier in the year when Nimoy passed on, and there was this explosion of, you know, grief. Or was it 2015?
It was 2015. That was 2015.
Man, time flies. But there was this explosion of grief for Nimoy.
Yeah.
And, like, Nimoy mania really just swept up the media for quite a period of time.
My Twitter feed was on fire.
Yeah, and, like, people we know who don't watch Star Trek or whatever were tweeting about Nimoy, posting about Nimoy, what have you. So, you know, Paramount knew that the world responded to these characters. Why the heck were they going, and Paramount and CBS also, we should say, you know, they knew that audiences and people who even necessarily weren't Star Trek huge fans had a fondness for the characters and would embrace them.
Yeah.
Why were they not running with this?
It
only helps them.
Yeah, and I do recall 25 years ago, they actually had, like, television specials dedicated to the 25th anniversary of Star Trek. I remember there was even, like, a big celebration about the 30th anniversary of Star Trek on TV as well.
Yeah.
That's where you get the Frasier parody of Star Trek, which is really, really difficult to watch.
Oh, really?
What is it?
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's the cast of Frasier pretending that they're on the bridge.
Of original series?
I think maybe Voyager. I think.
Oh, my God.
I think Kate Mulgrew might be the captain or something.
Who plays Kate Mulgrew?
It was actually painful to watch. I need to watch it again just to relive the pain. I might be getting the details wrong. It might be the original bridge, but I think it might be Voyager.
Please tell me Niles has, like, the face tattoo like Chakotay.
No, that would have been amazing. But I think
who's seven of nine? Please tell me the dad, John Mahoney.
She wasn't around in '96.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
Who was
Kes?
I don't think there was. I think it was just generic Star Trek crew members that they're all supposed to be. But look, at least they were doing something for the 30th.
Yeah.
And it came just 5 years after the 25th. But CBS here, do you hear any plans for them to have, like, some sort of celebration or recognition of Star Trek?
Well, you know, Tyler, the Oscars, you know, the year that Bond turned 50, did a big tribute to Bond in their Oscars. It was kind of wonky, but, you know, their heart was in the right place, that they were really celebrating Bond that year because of how important it was to the film industry. Now, at the time of when we're recording this episode, the Emmys were last night. Tyler, how was the Star Trek tribute?
I watched the Emmys from front to end.
Yeah.
There was no Star Trek tribute whatsoever.
Interesting.
Yes.
That's idiotic.
The only thing that I'll argue, though, is that, of course, the Emmys aired on ABC.
Sure.
If it was CBS, maybe they would have pushed for it. But I don't know. This whole thing just seems like kind of a big wet fart on the part of, like, Paramount and CBS as a whole.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly think, look, I'm not trying to be, like, one of those, like, really reactionary, crazy fans, but this is just, like, a real, like, fall-down mess on the part of celebrating, like, such a monumental franchise. Guys, they've made you billions of dollars, and they're not acknowledging it, really.
No.
I feel like they've really stamped.
In Canada,
yeah.
I feel like the 50th anniversary was driven almost purely by fans in the media.
Yes. Yes. It certainly wasn't...
And the manufacturers of stamps.
Well, okay, here's the thing. It seemed as if, like, Star Trek Beyond was a little bit rushed to theaters because I think Paramount initially wanted to capitalize on the 50th anniversary.
And then it didn't. Yes.
CBS, I believe, wanted to get Discovery out in time for the 50th anniversary, but then... From what I understand, and I could be mistaken, there's contractual issues in which it had come out at least 6 months after Paramount released a film.
Right.
So they physically legally we're not able to do any such thing.
Right.
I still think that precludes CBS from having some sort of televised kind of celebration showing clips from, you know, previous series.
Or, I mean, even drop a big Discovery announcement, if there is any.
What Discovery announcement did we get on September 8th? We did get one.
Did we get? What was it?
I believe, this is a few weeks ago, it was Brian Fuller saying that Balance of Terror had a big influence, is having a big influence on Star Trek Discovery.
Sure.
Whatever that means.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's not exactly a big bombshell.
No.
And that was like a tweet.
Yeah.
From Brian Fuller himself. Like,
I was hoping for some casting news, and maybe in 2 or 3 weeks from now, we can discuss maybe a little bit more about the news that's been developing over Star Trek Discovery for the last few weeks. But the series is now not going to premiere until May, so that's why there has not been any casting news for a series that was actually originally supposed to go in front of the camera, I guess this month, right?
I would think so, yeah.
I believe Brian Fuller actually said in interviews a few weeks, months ago, that they plan to start filming in September.
Right.
No casting news or anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just very, all I can say is this is very strange.
I mean, they could have just shown, like, a concept art of an alien or something.
They showed an antennae, of an Andorian, or an orange Andorian, which could be painted blue. Who knows?
Sure, yeah. You can do something.
Something.
You could do even, like, a painted poster.
Yeah.
Something, like, showing the ship.
Well, we did get those free posters after the screening of Star Trek Beyond.
Sure.
Yeah. Did you throw yours in the garbage?
No, I still have it.
I still have it. I like mine a lot more than you liked yours.
No, I haven't taken mine out yet because I haven't bought a frame.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you told me you hated it.
No, I don't hate it.
Okay.
No.
Maybe I'm... I thought you said it was ugly.
I don't know. That wasn't me. Maybe Fallen Coast, Ben Yong.
Okay.
Or Andy Chan, maybe.
Maybe it was Andy Chan. I don't know. Utter fail on the part of CBS and Paramount. Is there any disagreement?
I find it just so baffling. Like, so baffling.
Strange.
And, I grew up, as a big comics fan and all that. Like, I remember comic books, hyping the hell out of every major anniversary of a character. You know, they'd be like, everybody, that full month or whatever, every book would have 45th anniversary Captain America or whatever.
The Phantom.
I never read Phantom Comics, but come on. I was a Marvel zombie.
How come you're dressed as the Phantom right now, Cam?
Oh, no, this is just purple spandex. This is what I always wear.
Okay.
Marvel, was always, hyping the fans. Like, hey, this is a big deal. I remember Batman's 75th anniversary. They were hyping the heck out of that. It's ridiculous. Like, how much Star Trek has contributed to pop culture, to science. You know, yes, they did a documentary for the History Channel that we did not see.
We heard that it was pretty bad.
Yeah, I didn't go over great with fans.
Yeah.
But, why was there not, a glossy, CBS-run, hour-long tribute to it or something?
Yeah, we're not seeing that from CBS or Paramount. We are seeing special editions of, say, Time Magazine, Newsweek, Empire. They've been releasing, their own, celebrations of it. You mentioned... The fans have been doing more. Celebrities have been doing more to celebrate it than Paramount or CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to drop a huge bomb on us in mid-December to celebrate or what?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think this is it. I think if September 8th came and went and they did nothing,
yeah,
I think that's all we're getting.
Yeah. It seemed like that day, the September 8th day, was... fun for me to get up, and watch episodes that day. And, one of the podcasts I follow, Happy, Sad, Confused, it's hosted by Josh Horowitz. It's, Nerdist, sort of an interview podcast. But they put up an interview with Nicholas Meyer that day that I listened to, walking to and from work. And it was really entertaining. He's a fascinating guy. He's got to do a panel in Vegas.
Because I hope so.
He is just riveting to listen to tell stories in a real way with words. And he was just telling stories about making Star Trek 2 and 4. And that, to me, was the enjoyment. Free podcasts and, TV episodes I've owned for, however long.
Yeah.
And that was about it. And, one of my coworkers said to me, Hey, I heard on the radio today's like, you know, an anniversary for Star Trek or something. It's like, wow.
It's not registering the way that you would hope. So no. I guess going forward, you and I will still continue to celebrate. What are we doing later on this week, Cam?
We are going to see a screening of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
This will be the last movie, Star Trek film, that I have not actually seen in theaters.
I still have not seen 3.
You know what? You are correct. I have not seen 3 either. Thanks for really raining on my parade.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Star Trek VI was one of the first times that I was aware of Star Trek. I was quite young when it came out. All I could think was, what is an undiscovered country? I figured, no, it's science fiction. It should be an undiscovered planet, guys.
It's a good thing you weren't working for the CBS execs at that point. My lord.
I think 7-year-old brains is about like what the litmus test is over there. So, sure. Yeah, not surprising I wasn't hired right then and there. But so even like Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, that's something that I have memories kind of surrounding, even if I wasn't a bit like a Star Trek fan at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very much looking forward to that. Beyond that, in the coming weeks, you and I will be traveling, doing a road trip down to Seattle.
Right.
We've got the Experience Music Project there is putting a Star Trek exhibit on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be meeting some friends from all over North America to check it out.
Including Stefan Estanillo, who is a Klingon Games contestant.
Hopefully he's not going to hold it against me after I became the champion.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, so you and I will be celebrating. No thanks to Paramount, really.
And, you know, we went and saw the, as I said earlier, the Star Trek The Motion Picture on the big screen, which for me was a dream come true. That we went at the start of September. And to see that on the big screen was just astonishing to me. And there was no one in the audience. But, you know, to me, that was so exciting.
Well,
Star Trek 2 plays all the time, at least in our neck of the woods.
Yeah.
I've seen it, I think, 3 times on the big screen at this point. It played, I think, 2 weeks ago. I didn't even go because I've seen it so many times. Like, they show that one a lot. We'd seen Star Trek 4. They're doing that one this week. But it's so rare you would see 6 and the motion picture in a theater, and at least up here.
In the course of 1 month.
Yeah, yeah.
So, their Cineplex is celebrating the 50th, at least nominally.
Sort of. They're making, you know, $24 per screening.
Sure. One highlight I should bring up from The Love of Spock doc is there was a moment where Leonard Nimoy was talking about the motion picture.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, there's no script. It's just a really bad movie.
I was weeping at that point.
The characters, there's no character basis here. It's just bad. And I was just like looking over at you smirking, and you couldn't help but just laugh just a little bit. But I'll give you briefly like my thoughts on that.
Yeah, because we didn't discuss the motion picture after we watched it.
I think that was on purpose. We wanted to maybe save a little bit for the podcast. So,
you know, you had ranked it very low when we did the ranking the Star Trek movies.
Maybe just a notch or two above Star Trek Generations, which was at the bottom. I think it's maybe Generations.
Insurrection?
Perhaps, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough to say, but it was near the bottom. Watching it again, I went into it with a very open mind, because I think that aforementioned Stefan Estanillo, he had said that he went into it with an open mind. He could dig it a lot more than he had previously.
And Scott Hardy did, too.
So when we initially reviewed it, like I found myself uninvested in what was going on. Like the movie was mostly about Decker and Ilya,
mm-hmm.
I found. So I went in with an open mind, and I could really have far more appreciation of the visuals in it. I was far more engaged in this than any other screening of the motion picture that I had witnessed.
Yeah.
You know, the movie is very flawed. Like, I know you rank it in, like, the top tier of Star Trek films. It's a visual feast, absolutely. But I would absolutely be willing to bump it more towards the mid-tier
mm-hmm.
versus the bottom tier, just because it has a certain gravitas to it that, let's be honest, a lot of those next-gen films did not have, and I think the Star Trek Into Darkness really fell on its face as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be willing to reconsider my lineup and maybe push the motion picture into the mid-tier after watching this most recent screening with a very open mind.
It's a movie, to me, that, like 2001 A Space Odyssey, a movie that it obviously echoes intentionally, is done a great service by being seen on the big screen.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember watching 2001 at home on VHS tape back when I was a teenager.
Wow.
And I could not have been more bored sitting through that movie because you have the, you know, other distractions in the room. I remember I was watching my sister and she's like, can you pause it? I'm getting bored. You know, let's go grab, you know, whatever, a drink or something like that. Like, this is just a bit much. And so, like, I was never immersed in the movie. And it wasn't until quite a few years later that you and I went to a free screening at a theater near here, and I was just completely sucked into that movie in a way that I had never experienced at home. I don't think I ever could be at home. It was just the idea of just being having the screen in front of you, the grandeur of those images, and that's how I feel about the motion picture, is that while I get a lot more out of the motion picture at home, maybe than you do, on the big screen, to me, like, it just was like arresting to watch.
And maybe that's what sucked me in during this most recent screening, is that I was seeing it on the big screen for the first time ever, and it looked fascinating. But I don't know, I do wonder how audiences responded back in the day, because this was like a very financially successful film.
Yeah.
You know, so people kept seeing it again and again. I don't know if it's just because of the novelty of Star Trek back on the big screen, or they knew what the budget was, so they had to see how it was spent. I can't imagine audiences, like, loved this movie. And it hasn't fared so well among hardcore fans, you know, if you look at how they feel about the film.
Although, I would also say of 70s audiences, and look, I know it was referred to as a motionless picture and all that sort of thing, and not well-loved. Although, I would have thought audiences at that point in time would have had more patience for it than ones nowadays. Like, I understand completely any audience member nowadays who's like, this movie's long and boring, who, you know, doesn't like it for those reasons. But in the 70s, there was a lot of very slow science fiction. You know, you had 2001, you had Silent Running, you had Solaris. You know, there was a certain appreciation for those types of movies.
Solaris, yes. Mainstream audiences were flocking to Solaris at the time, Cam.
Well, okay.
At the Soviet film festivals. You know, of course.
Okay, maybe cross that one off the list.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? Like, there was an appetite. And just in general, movies were slower. You look at the 70s character-driven cinema.
Yeah.
You know, you watch Heaven's Gate. Don't tell me that that's a thrill ride.
I won't.
Or The Deer Hunter.
I thought that was a thrill ride.
Yeah, sure. You know, or just like movies of that era. It's really not until you get to the 80s that things become more fast-paced.
Like Cobra.
Exactly, like Cobra.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm kind of surprised in a way that the motion picture is held in sort of the unpopular regard it is from that era. I would have thought it would be maybe people saying, like, well, it's not quite what I wanted, but it was interesting.
But do you think the sentiment towards it is only coming from the modern era, or do you think people were more derisive of it, you know, back in the day as well?
I mean, I can only say that all my life, you know, friends or whatever have never liked it, have never, you know, but I mean, I grew up in the 80s. Although, I mean, Roger Ebert's original review wasn't very good either, and that's from 79.
And if you look at what all the actors have said, you know, in interviews, I haven't heard any of them talking about what a great film it was.
No.
So, and this is going back, you know, like, kind of archived, like, interviews, so.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I think it's a movie that people should revisit with an open mind, and if possible, catch it on the big screen. I think you'll get more out of it than what you would necessarily expect.
And one of the issues with the motion picture, too, is that it was put into theaters essentially unfinished. They had to rush it just to get it into theaters. And so Robert Wise ultimately has done a director's cut of the movie that you can get on DVD. It's unfortunately not a great quality. They haven't put it on Blu-ray because, again, maybe we can talk about that in just a second, about home video releases for the 50th anniversary. You know, put out this DVD version that is considered by most superior to the theatrical. I think I'm going to do a watch of it this week and maybe write a piece on the two of them.
Okay.
And sort of my thoughts on the motion picture. So I'll tweet that out and I'll mention it on the next podcast or whatever if I do it.
Post it on the blog as well, or at least post a link on the blog.
For sure. So yeah, keep an eye open for that. But, you know, let's talk about the video releases, because that to me is something that also they've kind of dropped the ball on. This is really the time to be really like hyping up, you know, I think some physical media releases of Star Trek. They are doing some things. They are putting out this new box set of the original series with the animated series. But it doesn't feel like they're really hyping it that much.
Yeah. Cam, you're... I don't want to say you're behind the times.
I am behind the times. I am well aware I'm behind the times when I say this.
Physical media is going the way of the dodo bird.
It's true.
It's all really going streaming. And we do have Netflix gaining back, you know, all the licenses for...
That's true.
Star Trek, all the old episodes. Mm-hmm. CBS All Access may have the rights for Star Trek Discovery, but everywhere else aside from Canada and the United States will be, it'll be Netflix airing, mm-hmm. you know, Star Trek Discovery as well.
Sure, yeah.
So I'm not going to fault Paramount, or I guess it's CBS that's releasing this kind of home media. I'm not going to fault them for not doing more physical releases. What I wish we could have had is, I don't know, like some sort of hint or news that maybe DS9 and Voyager would be getting a high-def remastering. But
right.
I just don't know if it makes any economic sense at this point, even though one Ira Steven Bear, when you asked him in Las Vegas at the convention there, he told you that your friend Tyler should never give up hope about a Blu-ray release.
Yeah,
which I think he's just really trying to string me along, and I don't know.
Maybe he knows something. But, I mean, I guess we should say there is going to be the upcoming Vault, the Roddenberry Vault release, which I think is interesting. You've kind of snickered about it. I don't know. I'm kind of excited to see it. They're doing a Blu-ray release of, I think it's like 10 or 12 episodes of the original series with new footage that was cut and kept in the Roddenberry Vault. And there's tons of documentaries and special features on this set. Tyler, you're just laughing.
I just think people don't get your hopes up. I think you could be in store for a big disappointment. That's all.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't mind watching some of the new docs, you know, that comes attached to this. But I can't see myself rushing out and digging through the Roddenberry Vault in the near future myself.
I am going to be getting that, like, right away. I am actually very excited about this release.
Look, if they have some extended scenes of Captain Kirk in a kimono teaching Charlie X ninja moves, then...
A kimono?
Yeah.
He was wearing tights.
In a kimono.
Was he... Oh, no, Charlie X was in a kimono.
Was it? Oh,
Or a gi. They're called, martial arts
I prefer
gi.
To call it a kimono, because it's far more diversive.
Right.
Yeah. If they have that there, perhaps. But, oh, I think our summary, though, is CBS, Paramount, get your acts together. You've got about 3 months left to do it right. Because right now, this is just an epic failure. And I'm not one of those fans that is just always complaining about, like, the higher-ups. I think overall, I mean, we should be happy that we got a Star Trek film come out this year.
Sure.
We're going to have a Star Trek series coming out in the next few months as well. I'm not going to, you know, whine and snivel too much about those big corporations.
It is weird, though, to me that, like, you know, I go to there's a comic book store near, kind of somewhat close to where you live, that I often frequent, and there's just no 50th anniversary merchandise or anything. Like, you know, you'd think you'd see some Star Trek stuff pop up here and there. Nope. Nothing. You know, even like a new t-shirt.
I think we got some, like, at the convention, that it was convention-made, kind of licensed material.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay.
And, you know, I'm glad you brought up the convention. You and I were at the 50th anniversary convention. Wouldn't that have been a fun time for CBS to maybe just drop something?
Well, then...
Something.
Something.
Anything.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing.
I think we got more when they, like, showed us behind-the-scenes footage on, like, their upcoming double dip of Star Trek Into Darkness, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. That was pretty sad.
That was pretty sad, but it was something. So, I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your disappointment about the 50th anniversary to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Are we, you know, making a bigger deal out of this than it really was? I mean, I guess we are, because we're actually talking about the 50th anniversary. You know, like, were you guys disappointed, or did you just celebrate in your own way? You know, what did you do to celebrate the 50th? That would be interesting to know, too. Now, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
We are going to be examining Star Trek Beyond, but what actually should come beyond Star Trek Beyond. We're going to look at what the future holds for the film franchise.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to talk about that.
We'll have a frequent guest, Patrick Johnston. By frequent, he's been on twice before, I think.
And he's always been great.
He's always been great, yeah. So it should be a great episode. He's very, very engaging to mm-hmm. listen to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vulcan salute to you all on the 50th anniversary, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in number 50. What a fail, Paramount and CBS.
For shame. So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.